And up next, this has been the Serena Sharp Show. Hot topics you really care about.
It's just about 9 o'clock straight up at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. Or for this next drop programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI. This is Sidney Bechet with a peppy piece called Muskrat Ramble as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org, and the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, lest we forget, of the Anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get calls. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. Checking out our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. Through which you can also contact us. Options aplenty to be in touch with us here at Talking Animals. Also, before I move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another provocative, hot topic-laden rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. And in doing so, you'll see, if you've otherwise listened to the show, you'll know that the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Sarah Coram, who's going to speak with us about a somewhat singular human versus animal controversy that's erupted in the last year or so around a cove on the shoreline in La Jolla, California, called the Children's Pool, where for decades several dozen seals, upwards at one point or another 200 seals, have lived, hung out, had their babies. Now, these seals are protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, but over the last several months, the San Diego City Council has voted to loosen or altogether remove the methods to actually protect the seals. And not coincidentally, many residents have decided to reclaim that beach for themselves, often disregarding the health and welfare of the seals, sometimes flagrantly harassing the seals. So it's a complex, emotionally charged situation, and we'll delve into it when Sarah Coram joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments, thoughts, questions about animals, animal news items that we're getting into momentarily, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, maybe you have an event, fundraiser, benefit, whatever coming up. Animal-related, of course, that we should be aware of. Observations of the animal world, really just about anything in that realm, would be most welcome. The phone number here, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting or important developments. In animal news, typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said all that, I think you know what comes next, right? Yes. Let's talk turkey! As it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. We sort of start off with tigers, tigers, and more tigers. Serena alluded to at least the sort of more notable aspect of tiger story locally. So we're going to start with that one, of course. Pretty much couldn't avoid this story on in print, on the radio, on TV, etc. But we're going to go with something we took right from the very front page of the news section, no less. Of the LA Times, Thursday. Headline, trackers kill tiger in Ventura County. Sharpshooters searching for a 425-pound tiger that had prowled the hills of Simi Valley for 2 weeks, shot and killed it Wednesday after a family awoke to find it walking past their backyard. The decision by government trackers to use high-powered rifles instead of tranquilizer darts to bring down the elusive cat outraged animal rights activists. But state officials said they had no alternative but to shoot to kill, because the animal could have attacked or bolted onto a highway or into a public park nearby. Thus ended a bizarre two-week saga that brought wilderness trappers to suburbia and forced families to keep children and pets indoors after huge cat tracks started being spotted throughout the oak-studded hills of eastern Ventura County. About 6 a.m. Wednesday, 45-year-old Ken Tucker woke to see the tiger slowly pacing along his backyard fence on Coffee Tree Lane in Moore Park, and then crouching next to his neighbor's wrought iron fence. Usually, he said, two small dogs were in the neighbor's yard. But they were inside. The tiger, Tucker said, was intently looking through that fence like it wanted something. It could easily have jumped that fence because it's only 5 feet high. Tucker woke his wife and teenage daughter and son. I told them they had to come and see this. Then I called 911 and said, I found the tiger you've been looking for. By the time game wardens arrived at the Tucker's front door, the tiger had made its way down a steep ravine below their housing development. The ravine sits between California 23, the highway there, and a public park. There, trackers from the State Department of Fish and Game, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ventura County Sheriff's Department cornered the tiger, and four rifle shots brought it down. State officials said the alternative was to risk the chance that the tiger would run on the freeway or into the park, where saucer-sized paw prints are embedded in mud beside the soccer field and a basketball court. Quote, if the cat got out of the air, there's no telling what could have happened, said Troy Swager, a spokesman for Fish and Game. Using a tranquilizer gun was an option that was available, but the safety of residents and motorists was of great concern. But animal rights activists said death was too high a penalty for an animal that had not harmed anyone since tracks were discovered February 8th on the grounds of a nursery in the nearby Santa Rosa Valley. Quote, with all this time to track it and all these options, they could draw on. You have to ask the question, was it really necessary to kill the tiger, said Madeline Bernstein, president of the Los Angeles branch of the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Martin Dins, a consulting veterinarian to the Shambhala Preserve in Acton, said the trackers could have planned for the moment and avoided killing the cat. A tiger's behavior after being tranquilized, he said, is predictable. After being shot with a tranquilizer dart, a tiger will run 50 to 100 yards from the source, then begin to slow, Dins said. It will lose consciousness in about 10 minutes, and even that can be reduced by over-tranquilizing, he said. Fish and Game's attitude to seek and destroy rather than to protect and serve, Dins said. Actress Tippi Hedren, who runs the Shambhala Sanctuary, which houses exotic cats, most taken from private homes, was livid. Quote, if they had tranquilized it and it ran away or decided to attack the hunter, then kill it, she said. But at least try to sedate it first. Goes on from there, the story does. But your thoughts, comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Did they do the right thing? Or was the public safety best served by this? Could they have gone the tranquilizer route initially? Of course, there's other surrounding stories in terms of where that tiger came from. I don't know if it's yet been determined, but there's certainly a couple in Ventura County who had permits for three exotic cats, tigers namely. And I think when they went to see these people, two of those were there. One was missing. So, and yet these people didn't report their tiger missing. So, some uncertainty surrounding this. And meanwhile, as part of our Tigers, initial foray into the animal news today, significant news, really, for those of us who followed closely the story of Tiger Rescue in Colton, California. We've talked about that for more than a year here on Talking Animals. Quick nutshell, that was a so-called sanctuary in Colton, California, out by Riverside, where there was mostly tigers, some other animals as well. And the short version of the story is that both that facility and the home of the proprietor were raided, where they found just astonishing degrees of neglect and abuse of animals. And at the guy's home, there was dead and frozen carcasses. There were tiger cubs wandering around. There was an alligator in the bathtub, etc. And these people had a little kid. I think he was like 6 or 8 at the time. We'll find out more when we get into the story. And at the tiger rescue facility, these tigers were in such poor condition, mostly emaciated. They weren't getting fed or watered properly, etc. So once this guy was arrested, an amazing man named Chuck Tracy, who we've talked about and in fact had on the show, came from his facility that he otherwise runs at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Ramona, California, near San Diego. And for, I swear, the better part of 2 years has looked after the day-to-day operation of Tiger Rescue. And with a huge battalion of volunteers, looked after those animals. No one else obviously was in a position to once this guy had been arrested. And nursed many of them back to health. And as we've also talked about on Talking Animals, most of them have been relocated to a special habitat, 10-acre habitat that was set up for them in R2000 up in San Andreas, Northern California. So that all leads us into reading this story. Also from the LA Times, February 23rd. A Riverside County jury convicted animal sanctuary operator John Weinhardt of child endangerment and animal cruelty charges Tuesday for keeping malnourished tigers and decomposing carcasses at his facility and tranquilizers and live alligators within reach of his young son. The convictions leave Weinhardt 62, subject to the maximum prison term of 36 years when he is sentenced March 22nd. His attorney argued that Weinhardt deserved no jail time. Quote, on a first offense, child endangerment when no one was hurt, and animal neglect? That's not worthy of jail time, R. Addison Steele II, Weinhardt's attorney, said after the verdict was announced. Quote, I was very surprised. A great injustice was done here today. A 9-woman, 3-man jury listened to more than 3 weeks of testimony and deliberated 2 days before convicting Weinert of 56 of 61 counts. Weinert was arrested after Riverside County Animal Control authorities raided his Glen Avon compound in April 2003 and found 58 dead tiger cubs stuffed into freezers, dead adult tigers rotting on the property, and alligators swimming in a bathtub. His son, then 8, was living at the sanctuary. In Weinert's refrigerator, authorities discovered chocolate Easter bunnies sitting atop tiger tranquilizers, according to court testimony. Quote, "Those were deplorable, filthy conditions," said jury forewoman Janet Jensen after the verdict was announced. "There were exposed needles in the refrigerator, a live tiger swiping outside the back door. That's a dangerous situation for a young boy to be around." And the story goes on from there. But sentencing again comes up March 22nd. And have to presume that it'll be a significant sentence if it's, he was convicted indeed of 56 of the 61 counts, many of which were felonies. So that may or may not serve as an example for others across the country who have done and continue to do much the same thing. So, but virtually simultaneous with that verdict being announced, the last 6 or 7 tigers that were remaining at Tiger Rescue were relocated up to the amazing 10-acre enclosure I mentioned earlier up at R2000 in San Andreas. So they, that story has a happy ending for the tigers. It's a great spread, and they've kind of just moved them in shifts just to get people kind of adjusted, and certain tigers get along better with others and need to be kind of exposed and get acclimated, and then another grouping came. So the last one was... last group of tigers was moved a few days ago. And I think Chuck Tracy can now go back to his life. But, boy, what an amazing, heroic figure that guy is, Chuck Tracy. So, and in fact, as a kind of combined story, I noticed the LA Times on Friday had some great pictures of tigers, the remaining ones at Tiger Rescue before they were moved. That dealt with both the shooting of the tiger that we just discussed and then this tiger rescue legal case. And inside, there's a great picture of Chuck looking into a cage at one of the remaining tigers. So, anyway, those things, I'm sure, can all be seen online if you didn't see them at the time. And so, for some tigers who have been exploited and taken advantage of and neglected and poorly treated, you know, again, the story can't have a happy ending. Thank God. All right, we should probably jump into our animal quiz. It's a quick question, as you know. It's today, again, going to be true-false. And first person who calls in with the correct answer at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, we'll get their choice of prizes, which again range from the DVD by Triumph the Insult Comic Dog to Talking Animals merchandise, merch. We've got Talking Animals t-shirts, Talking Animals sweatshirts, Talking Animals coffee mugs. We've got t-shirts from other animal organizations, including PAWS, the people who run the ARC 2000, aforementioned ARC 2000, where those tigers are heading. This one actually deals with elephants. It's a cool shirt with a neat drawing of an elephant, saying elephants don't belong in circuses. And we've got cat toys, dog collars, books, CDs, most of which tie into previous guests on Talking Animals, and much, much more. So, if you are the first person to call in and correctly answer this quiz question, you will have your choice of those prizes, as you or someone else will later in the show when we play Name That Animal Tune. So with that intro, let's dive in. Okay, here we go. Here's the question. True or false? A single small brown bat can catch 600 mosquitoes in 1 hour. True or false? Know the answer? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And moving on with the animal news, I found this interesting, because I just hadn't really thought in those terms regarding the insane torrential downpour as we began experienced here recently. good old Southern California. So I'm just going to read some of this to you. Southern California's dairy industry is stuck in the mud. Torrents of rain this month have soaked into piles of manure, leaving about 300,000 dairy cows, calves, and other cattle in the Chino Valley mired in so much muck that exhausted and sick animals are dying at three times the normal rate, an industry trade group says. The waterlogged mess, quote, acts like a giant sponge and expands, said Nathan DeBoom, assistant manager of the Milk Producers Council in Chino. The cows have to drag through that muck to the feed and the milk barn, and they are tired and losing weight. The quagmire will cost the dairy farmers about $40 million this month in lost cows and milk production and extra labor to manage the animals and control manure-tainted runoff, industry officials said. That adds up to a significant chunk of the region's $700 million annual milk production, which accounts for about one-sixth of California's $4 billion in milk and cream production. The dairy industry's economic injuries tell only part of the story of the financial consequences of this winter's storms. Jack Kaiser, chief economist of for the Los Angeles County Economic Development Corporation, estimated that they could cause as much as $500 million in damage to the Southern California economy. For cows, the weather has been a particular problem. They need dry ground where they can lie down and rest. Surrounded by mud, the bovines tend to stand around, which wears them out and increases their chances of catching pneumonia and other illnesses. Quote, normally I have 1 to 2 cows a month die out of 2,000 animals, said Art Marquez Jr., a third-generation dairyman who's... Well, it looks like we may have somebody calling in to guess on the quiz question. Let's see. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI.
I think the answer is false.
Well, you had a 50-50 chance. Sadly, you're on the wrong side of that 50-50. It actually is true.
Wow.
I know. We should get some of those bats for certain areas where mosquitoes are heavy. I don't know if you can... import them or train them or whatever, but I was impressed by their input or their outtake or whatever. But yeah, that actually is true. So
okay.
Well, I appreciate you calling in to guess, and thanks for listening, and try again next week.
Great show, thanks.
Thank you. Anyway, like I said, I mean, you just don't think of some of these things, and at least I didn't initially. As being a direct consequence of the torrential rains that we've experienced once again here in Southern California. But I did find that notable on the dairy cow front. And unfortunately, you know, we're all going to bear the brunt of that when prices, of course, go up. Got a minute time for maybe one or two more quick things. Actually, I'll take this from the recent newsletter from the Orange County People for Animals. A couple items they had there. I want to read. Last Chance for Animals announced that its ongoing undercover investigation of Class B dealer C.C. Baird's Martin Creek Kennels and Pat's Pine Tree Farms provided evidence used to close both businesses for good. The licenses of C.C. Baird, his wife, and their two daughters have been permanently revoked, and the USDA APHIS also imposed maximum fines. The torturing and killing of dogs and cats at these kennels has finally come to an end. By the way, Class B, a license, is a permit used by the USDA allowing someone to obtain companion animals from auctions, pounds, or through classified ads, and then sell them for use in research laboratories. And on the foie gras front, following the successful passage of legislation in California that will ban the force feeding of birds for foie gras, several other states are now also considering similar humane legislation. In addition to recently introduced bills in New York and Massachusetts, a bill was just introduced in Illinois that will prohibit foie gras cruelty if passed. So that's that. And there was one other thing I found here somewhere. According to a recent article in USA Today, Mercedes-Benz is offering to shed the skins when it comes to leather seats on its ritziest models in the name of animal rights. Until now, its most expensive vehicles have come with leather as the only alternative. Hopefully, other car manufacturers will follow their compassionate and practical lead. So I think that's probably going to do it for today's edition of the Animal News. We had at least a handful of other things I wanted to get to. Maybe we'll have time at the end. If not, we'll try to bring some of these back in next week. And... So meanwhile, if there are ever any news stories or announcements or events that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And we'd also love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, any other animal topic that's on your mind. So that email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm also pleased to remind you about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site. It's talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net. And sign up for the email list when you get there if you could, so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about every show we've ever done, sort of photographs and articles, some we've written, some that have been written about us, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by and take a look around. The site again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Robert Klein with the first minute or so of a piece called Animals All on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
Our whole view of animals is entirely human. We see them in our own image. I don't want to shock anyone here, but there are chimpanzees in Africa that do not smoke cigars and roller skate. They're not named Jimmy and Jojo and Simba. And they don't ordinarily wear tuxedos and funny hats. Everything is anthropomorphic. We see everything through human terms. On a cockroach spray can, it says on the side of the can, spray underneath the sink, they like moisture. Since they can like and dislike, they dislike wide open, well-lit, dry spaces. They're bored by television. They love weddings. Cockroach. First of all, if you spray underneath the sink, they don't go underneath the sink. They're up in the cabin and attacking the Lorna Dunes. Can't spray the Lorna Dunes, you poison yourself. Well, these are human examples. People leave the cats alone for 5 days, so I hope they won't be bored.
All right. That was Robert Klein with a snippet of a piece called Animals All, taken from his album New Teeth. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. And you're indeed listening to Talking Animals at KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you, maybe, arrive through our show website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. And earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Sarah Coram, who's going to speak with us about this odd human versus animal battle, but probably instructive controversy, really, that's erupted in the last year or so around a cove on the shoreline in La Jolla, California, called the Children's Pool. And well, for several decades, really, so several dozen seals have lived, hung out, and had their babies. Rather than, I guess, my providing a more detailed overview of the situation, let's jump right into a conversation with someone who's really steeped in it. So let's remind you all of the phone number to join that conversation. It's or ask Sarah a question for that matter. It's 949-824-5824. As we welcome Sarah Coram to Talking Animals. Are you there, Sarah?
Yes, I am.
Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals today.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, you know, really, the seals have been there for years and years. I mean, as long as I can remember. And but again, you're obviously really steeped in the situation. So maybe you could just give us a bit of history of the seal colony or rookery at Children's Pool, and I guess that's also known as Casa Beach. And you know, how long the seal's been there, and just kind of just give us a little bit of background first, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Okay. Well, the seals obviously were there first. They've been there since at least the 1800s. If you see maps of La Jolla from the 1800s, it used to be called Seal Rock. And then because of commercial fishing and hunting, where the seals weren't protected, their numbers decreased radically. So in the 1930s, when the seal wall was built to have a children's pool there actually weren't too many seals there at the time. But when the Marine Mammal Act was passed in the 1970s, their numbers started to increase, and they started coming back to the area, to the Casa Pool.
And so really since around the 70s, they've kind of hung out in that cove, in that area, and, you know, they just spend their time there. They
right.
they have their babies there. So that's pretty much, obviously, for about 30-some years or so, kind of been the situation.
Right, but their numbers hasn't been as high as it is now since probably about the 1990s.
And so, okay, well, but still, the situation, even though if their population may have, you know, varied a little bit, I mean, certainly in the last year or so, the situation really seemed to change significantly. I mean, maybe you could tell us kind of what happened exactly. What did change to cause this sort of a whole eruption of this controversy that we're talking about?
Okay, well, back in 1997, the water around the area was polluted. And it wasn't due to the seals, as there's a big myth about that. But anyway, the water was polluted, and so people couldn't use that area for swimming. So in 1999, the city council decided to at least protect the seals that were there, and they put a rope barrier to keep people back, to give the seals rest so that they can have their babies and bond appropriately. And then in September of this year, it came up for re-vote again in the city council, and they decided to not keep the rope barrier going. And what has happened since then is that the laws in California has changed, where as long as you have a warning that you can swim at your own risk, then people are allowed to go into the water and use it as a recreational for swimming.
But why, just to back up for a sec, why did the city council make that change? I mean,
I think some of the city council members maybe changed. There were some new people on board that weren't there before.
Mm-hmm.
And they also put a proposal forward to dredge the beach. What they want to do is turn it into a kids' pool, which would be at a great cost to the city and taxpayers, and it would, in effect, drive the seals away.
So basically, there were sort of two things maybe that overlapped, that the city council sort of decided, A, that they wanted to dredge that area, and B, that they wanted to make that beach, in the meantime even, more open to regular beachgoers. And so I guess the upshot, if I follow you, is that then they decided to remove the rope.
Right, and what they said is they wanted to use the area as a joint use.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you can't share that beach with the seals. The seals are very, very timid. They're very shy. And if you approach them, they don't look at us as friendly people who just want to swim. They look at us as predators. And they flush into the water, and they're not able to rest on the beach, which they really need to do. They can't be in the water all the time.
Right.
And it would just drive the population away. So you cannot share that beach with seals.
Well, with that in mind, Sarah, maybe you could tell us what's happened there since the city did remove the rope.
Okay, well, since the city removed the rope back in September,
mm-hmm.
it was total chaos there for a couple of months. There's so many visitors that are drawn to come to the La Jolla Cove just to look at the seals.
Sure.
And without any signs or any rope, any barriers, the visiting public did not know to stay back away from the seals.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go there, and I would see, you know, three seals crowded by so many people trying to take pictures, trying to pet them, touch them, and normally you can see up to 150 seals just laying on the whole area.
Yeah.
So so it was just total chaos, and there was volunteers going down there trying to ask people to stay back, but it really wasn't working. So starting in January of this year, I started a program called Rake a Line, where we have a sign that says, "This is a seal rookery, please stay back." And we have a raked sand line now that's where the old rope barrier is. And that is really helping to keep people back, the unsuspecting public who really care about the seal.
Mm-hmm.
back, and we're seeing more seals down on the beach.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm going to come back to that for one sec, but just to back up for one moment more on sort of the aftermath of the city council removing the rope. I mean, I gather from just, you know, things I've read, things I've heard, whatever, that when you talk about chaos, I mean, it sounds like there were, like, arguments, that there were fisticuffs, that I gather that the police responded to, like, maybe 50-some-odd disturbances there, most of which came, I think, after the rope was removed, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
And there are also seven pups that were born prematurely because of the stress on the moms and not being able to rest on the beach and having constant harassment, whether it was intentional or unintentional, that people just didn't know better.
Right, but that's still the result was that. Okay, if you just tune in, this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm speaking with Sarah Coram, who's pivotal in the effort to try to protect the seals, who for many years, again, have lived and had their babies on or around a cove in the La Jolla shoreline. And these seals are protected, which we'll get into more with Sarah in a moment, under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, but nonetheless, or ostensibly are, but nonetheless, in the last year or so, many residents, as we're hearing now, have decided to disregard sort of that protection, whether they, again, unintentionally or otherwise, are harassing the seals. So if you'd like to join the conversation, I have a question for Sarah. Please call us at 949-824-5824. So, Sarah, let's hear a little bit more about this Rake a Line, Hold a Sign efforts, because if I'm not mistaken, you, in fact, coordinate that volunteer effort, do you not?
Yeah, I do coordinate that effort, and it's really just so labor-intensive that it's really just a temporary measure to get the seals through the pupping season, but basically we try to have 24/7 coverage, someone down there all the time holding a sign. It's really more of an educational program, informing the public to stay back, give their seals a rest so that they can have their babies on the beach and also bond with the newborns.
Sure.
And if anyone crosses the line and if any harassment occurs, then we call the 1-800 number and report the incident to the federal government.
And then what happens then? Do people come out? Does an official come out to deal
Unfortunately, with... Unfortunately, no. You know, we can't enforce the law. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that we should even be there is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The law, the federal and state law, they're being broken all the time, and there's no one down there enforcing it. We can just inform the public and ask them to stay back.
And do you find that most people are respectful of that? I mean, you know, I was down there a couple of weekends ago, and it just seems like where that the volunteer is situated and holding that sign, and with the rake line, at least, I went down there like three times during that weekend, and it seemed like most people, came up to that person, asked some questions, but were very respectful.
Yeah, I would say more than 90% of the public is really respectful.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the people, and, you know, I've gotten to the point where I can recognize them now. a group of about 10 or so people who come to the beach at different times who don't really care about the seals.
And
then they cross the line whether or not you have the sign.
And maybe I'm showing my pro seal colors here, but why has this particular beach become such a lightning rod for this controversy? I mean, doesn't La Jolla have all kinds of great beaches?
It does have a lot of great beaches. That's part of the controversy there. Biologically speaking, this area is perfect for the seals, and that's why they've been there since the 1800s. It's
sure.
a nice protected area for them, and it gives them access to the ocean so that they can go and hunt. But there's so many other areas where kids can swim. I mean, right across the cove, right next to it, within 5-minute walking distance. So it seems, it's hard for me to believe that this little piece of beach, you know, has to be used for human use, too. And actually, you're right, there's so many visitors that come down to see the seals. And there's a lot of children and families who come down there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 9 times out of 10, if you ask a child whether they would prefer to see the seals or go swimming, they always say, you know, we want to see the seals.
Sure.
We can go swimming elsewhere.
Right. So that's the thing, then. I just wonder, then, if at least some of these people who have, you know, kind of... protested this, gone to the city council, and some of the people who you've just described, you know, disregard the rake line.
Uh-huh.
I mean, are those just people who have just, over the years, maybe gotten their back up, dug their heels in the sand, as it were, because of being prevented from having full access to the beach for so many years? I mean, with the rope and the signs. I mean, I just gather that for a while, some of the folks that were trying to protect the seals in the past, seal advocates, whatever, were a little aggressive, maybe fairly unpleasant to some of the people that were trying to use the beach. So is this in some way kind of a reaction, partly against that kind of earlier way that some of the people who had, again, the best intentions of protecting the seals, but maybe their manner, their approach was perhaps in retrospect a bit counterproductive?
Yeah, I mean, the program has really changed a lot. It could be a reaction to that. You know, some people just don't like being restricted. They mm-hmm. want to be able to use whatever beach they want.
Sure.
But this program, the Rake Align, is very, it's non-confrontational.
Yeah.
It's an educational program. You know, if people cross, we can't stop them, and we don't yell at them.
Sure.
But on the other hand, we do get a lot of harassment from them.
Sure.
And all we're doing is holding a sign, and, you know, the harassment continues with those people saying, what are you doing down here, and don't you have a life? And
yeah, no, it's pretty, I mean, that's the thing, it's so emotionally charged.
Yeah.
I mean, just from the things I've read and heard and you know, just doing a little research before you and I were going to talk this morning, I found, I found such an insane, or to me, insane letter in, I guess it was San Diego City Beat from some guy who, I just thought, you know, I mean, it almost seemed like a gag. He was seemed like so mad at the SEALs and the people trying to protect them. And I
mm-hmm.
just thought, you know, again, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And, you know, I guess
yeah,
there is some...
Yeah, I think a lot of them maybe remember swimming down there as
yeah.
children, and they have a lot of emotions tied to the place.
Right,
and
yeah.
it could be that when they were children that they could swim down there because there weren't as many SEALs yet.
Sure.
It's like the SEAL population has increased and they're starting to come back to the area.
Right. So this has been taken away from at least some of those people, and they're mad, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're right next door. There's other areas where they can go.
Sure.
You know, it's just such a very small beachfront.
Well, let's because it's not just as it turns out, as these things often become. I mean, it's not just where, you know, people are mad and it's emotionally charged. I mean, you know, let's indeed talk lawsuits for a sec. Because I know as recently as Friday, the Humane Society of the United States filed suit against the city of San Diego on this matter, and let's come back to that in a moment. But let's first talk about the suits that were brought against the city before that one. I mean, as a measure of how complex and emotionally charged the situation really is, I mean, there were two suits that I know of, at least,
mm-hmm.
one on actually each side of this issue, right? I mean, one was somebody, a local, you know, a resident, saying the city must keep the seals away because this beach was given, I guess, in a trust specifically for the children, right? I mean, in some sort of like the, you know, philanthropist there, woman Scripps, I think it was, donated money to build this breakwater to provide the sheltered area so for children. So I guess
right. But if you look at the language of that, it has like several things listed that beach could be used for.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's like A is for the kids, B is for recreation. At the time that it was built, the seals weren't there.
I
so,
see.
You know, it's hard to say that whether this person was alive today, whether she would consider it, with the seals being there, a recreational activity for
right,
the kids.
Right, right. Hey, Sarah, looks like we might have a caller from call from one of our listeners. You want to take that? And,
sure.
Okay. Hi, all right, maybe they'll call back. We missed them probably.
Oh, okay.
But, that's good to know because, yeah, I felt like, well, this thing, again, is so... actually, here they are, probably calling back. Hold on one sec. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking
Animals. I have a question for Sarah.
Please.
Hi, Sarah. You're wonderful doing the work you're doing.
Oh,
I was
thank
just
you.
Wondering, I know you said you hold up a sign. Are you able to do any videotaping, or what proof are you able to put forth that this really is going on when you call that 1-800 number? Are you able to tell them, you know, that you've got certain proof about this? How does that work?
To document, you mean, the harassment and stuff?
Right, exactly.
Right, I see, yeah.
Right, well, we have one person who's involved with the Rake Align program who lives fairly close to the cove and who has a video camera.
I see,
so
okay.
So if there's some incidents going on, then we can call him and he can come down and videotape.
Right.
We have so much evidence of the harassment that's going on videotape.
Oh, okay, well, that's good
and
to know.
And pictures, you know, we have so much documentation. It's just very clear. Yeah, it's very clear.
Can you see, do you know of a day when a decision will be made regarding this, that Do you have any hope for that? A favorable decision, I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
You don't know?
I'm not sure how long it would take, you know.
Well, don't get discouraged.
My experiences with lawsuits is that they can take a long time.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, don't get discouraged. You're doing a wonderful thing. Thank you for taking my call. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling. So, yeah, indeed, Sarah, because I guess the other suit that preceded the Humane Society one is that, you know, some animal rights advocates or organizations sort of banded together, if I'm not mistaken, and filed suit challenging the city council's, you know, vote about dredging that beach and removing the rope barrier, right?
Right, and it was more about the city not upholding state law. There's laws out there that protect wildlife on their beaches.
Right.
And the city is in clear violation of the state and federal law.
So that's what I wanted to ask, is by virtue of taking down the rope and taking down the signs, I mean, maybe there's a little fuzzy area in there, but how are they upholding the Marine Mammal Protection Act if there's nothing being done to protect those marine mammals?
Well, that's just it. They're not upholding it. It's a blatant, clear violation of the law.
And is that the crux, really, of the lawsuit, at least the initial one that the animal rights groups?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's probably similar, I imagine, to what the main force of the Humane Society suit is, right? I mean, I assume they're probably just supporting the initial suit too, with the same idea, right? That the city,
and they're taking it to another level. I think, you know, emphasizing that they're also breaking federal law.
Okay. And so I guess the only tricky part here is, as you just said to our caller, is that these things are going to take time. I mean, the Humane Society one was only just filed Friday, so it's going to take time for people to respond and for those things to make their way. So in a perfect world, what's going to happen in the meantime? Are you just going to maintain the Rake-A-Line volunteer program and just hope that people can protect the seals as much as possible, at least during the pupping season?
Right, for as long as we can. We'll just maintain that line down there. And there's also so many other things you can do, is by writing the San Diego council members and encouraging them to put this whole issue up for a revote.
And let me ask you this, because, I mean, it didn't seem like there's a couple different websites, I gathered, but is there one in particular that you'd like our listeners to know about where they could find out about maybe how to write letters or how to otherwise help out or get involved?
I would go to San Diego Animal Advocates.
Okay. And is that animaladvocates.org?
I believe so.
Yeah, okay.
And just to get a history of what's going down at Castapool, you want to check out SaveTheSanDiegoSeals.com.
Right, okay, those are the two that I thought, and that's where people could get information. And could they also get information there about, even if they're listening in another part of the country or whatever, about how to write the city council people and other things that would help kind of keep pressure on the city?
Right, and one of the biggest things they could do, you know, if you're a tourist from out of the state or out of the country, is you can call the Visitors Bureau and tell them that, you know, they need to support the seals, because they have advertised in there that you can go down to La Jolla and visit the seals.
So, in other words, yeah, when people start to see the tourist dollars affected, that'll get their attention, right?
That's one strategy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so would the best thing that would come from this be resuming what had happened before the city council made that vote? In other words, are you guys hoping that, hey, let's get the rope back, let's get the signs back, or are the things even beyond that that you were hoping would be the outcome of all this?
I think my goal is to have this place become a federal marine reserve. I think the rope is also, I mean, that's the short-term goal,
mm-hmm.
but that's also a temporary measure. You know, if this, really, it's just such a treasure to be able to watch wildlife in action right in front of your eyes.
Yeah, yeah, no,
and,
really.
And to be able to protect that little beach area is the ultimate goal for me.
Sure, no, well, that makes sense, and I think, Just to give people, unfortunately, maybe you know, it might be unpleasant, but a better idea of some of the stuff that's happened. I mean, you know, just again from what I've read, and even speaking with some of the volunteers there a couple weekends ago when I was down there. I mean, maybe you could tell us some of the things. I mean, there have actually been not just harassment of people trying to touch, like you say, or get near, get too close for a picture of a seal, but I think actual attacks, physical attacks on some of these seals. Have there not been?
Yes, there has been, and we have those documented.
I mean, one even, I think, was, like, stabbed or poked with something and then died later. And, I mean, and also, too, that people probably wouldn't think about unless they really were faced with this is that then when some of them are just even harassed a little bit, chased, or they have to run back into the water if they're trying to rest. I mean, some of these are moms who are about to deliver pups, and, you know, I guess quite a few have had miscarriages, right, as a result of the kind of stress.
Right, because they've had births prematurely to pups who weren't able to survive because of all the harassment.
Right.
I mean, it can be something very subtle.
Yeah.
Just walking up to them, not even touching them, and they going into the water. That's a harassment right there. That's breaking federal law.
Sure.
And that doesn't, and by doing that, the moms can't rest.
Right.
So.
Man.
So I mean, I think that you can observe the seals so nicely just from the sea wall.
Yeah.
And the sidewalk. You don't even need to come down on the beach. That would be the ultimate goal.
Sure. No, and it's great. And it really, there's something, I mean, if people like animals even a little bit, I mean, there's something so, you know, when they're just sitting there and people aren't getting too close, I mean, to me, there's just something so kind of mesmerizing and just peaceful and tranquil about sitting there and watching those seals. They just, you know, most people are just hanging. Sometimes they'll kind of, you know, inch up or down or head into the water or come out. But, I mean, and then you see right now, especially you see, like, the pups, the babies.
Yeah, and the interaction right now between the moms and the babies is so amazing.
So, you know.
And it's nothing, it's not something that's staged, you know. This is
right. It's not, we're not at a zoo.
This is how it happens in nature, which is just so amazing to be able to watch that.
Absolutely. So really all the more reason, as you say, to kind of preserve this and protect them and take further steps. So, Sarah, again, really appreciate your time and joining us today on Talking Animals. And I want to remind people again, there's a couple different websites they can go to find out more or to help out one way or another. It's SaveTheSanDiegoSeals.com. And then animaladvocates.org to, again, get some information, see how you can help.
Yeah, the San Diego Animal Advocates.
Oh, really? Now, see, I thought it was Animal Advocates, the website that I went to for San Diego Animal Advocates.
Oh, okay. You're probably right.
Yeah, but either way, if you put San Diego Animal Advocates in your search engine, and you'll come up with it. But I believe it's animaladvocates.org. But either way, that's what you're looking for, San Diego Animal Advocates and SaveTheSanDiegoSeals.com. Sarah Cornham, thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals. Good luck in your efforts, and we'll keep a close eye on it, and hopefully have a little progress update report down the road with good news.
Thank you
so much. All right, again, I want to thank Sarah Cram for joining us on Talking Animals, and I hope you'll check out those websites, find out more about it. It's a pretty unusual circumstance, and there's a long way to go on that, but hopefully with this recent suit filed by the Humane Society of the U.S. Maybe that'll further give us you know, some teeth in getting the city council to stand up and take notice. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time now to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. Again, this is pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. So I'm playing a little tune here. There'll be a prize for the first person who calls in to correctly identify this animal tune. 949-824-5824. There's your answer. Come on, I can't make it much simpler. All right, can you name that animal tune? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, if you can. And if you can't, that's all right. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. We have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guests, Sarah Karam. Let's hope the rope goes back up and that either way, all folks there respect the seal's health and well-being, and especially when moms are trying to deliver their seal pups. Also want to thank you all for listening and for the phone calls we received. I hope you'll join us next Monday, March 7th, when our guest will be Gene Boston, co-founder of Farm Sanctuary, the nation's largest farm animal rescue and protection organization. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday. Can you believe it? That's just Monday. Yeah. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. And again, I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list. We can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, animal songs, animal comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. No, seriously, I do. I mean it. Okay. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. His great, great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune, one that should roll nicely in the Jeff Scott Show, in fact. This is the White Stripes with Little Bird on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
I got a little bird. I'm gonna take her home. Put her in a cage. And disconnect the phone. If you give me a look, I'm gonna get the book. I'm gonna preach the word. I wanna preach the birds as I walk the floor. Yeah, this I know.
she gone.
This is Knockout Greg from Knockout Greg and Blue Weather, and you're listening to Jeff Scott, infecting you with the blues to see. ¶¶